Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. Good evening, good afternoon, wherever you might be on the East Coast. Good evening, good afternoon for those of you who might be on the West Coast, perhaps overseas somewhere. Good morning. But anyway, good day and peace be on you. We are once again blessed to have another edition of Religion Means Alive. I'm your host, Imam Alfred, of the host of Religion Means Alive, and the president of Imam Alfred Muhammad Ministry. And before we introduce our guests, or reintroduce our guests, I'd just like to do a few housekeeping announcements. On tomorrow, we will have Mayor Wayne Smith, mayor of Irvington, New Jersey. He happens also to be a Muslim African-American mayor. He's going to be on Saturday. Sunday, I will give a lecture on establishing government for posterity. And we will continue our interviews Monday through Saturday with various guests. We will announce them to you as they come along, but we plan to have Brother Roz Waraka on, and just a whole series of guests. And as I was telling a guest who was running for the mayor, not the mayor, but the city council in East Orange, I'm not a pig, neither do I eat the pig, and I don't act as a pig on my program. So I open the program up to with people. Sometimes I agree with them. Many times I don't agree with them. But it's not my job to agree or disagree. My job is to expose our audience to various mindsets. And as a result of that, we are bringing treats. Sometimes we are able to bring steaks. Sometimes we'll be able to bring nothing but pork, P-O-K-E. But we are trying to at least bring something home for our audience. Dear beloved people, we are blessed again today to have with us Imam Yusuf Abdus Salam of Selma, Alabama. He is firstly a brother. He is a brother imam, and by profession an attorney and a teacher and the second generation preacher. So we have a full range of emotions and mentalities, and as philosophers would call it, ontologies to introduce to you. So I'm going to shut up and ask our dear brother to give us an opening statement. This is part two of hopefully what will be a four-part interview of Brother Imam Abdus Yusuf Salam. I will come back after he gives us an opening statement, and we will talk about his time on city council, and then we will go from the city council time to the state legislature. So, Brother Imam, it's your... be on our noble and honorable listening audience. We are now privileged and honored to have our brother Imam Muhammad Shakur with us. Eden Barak to you, and assalamu alaikum, and the 40 greetings to you. We are entering the 40th year of Imam W.D. Muhammad's leadership.
Eden Mubarak, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Spoken like a fluent Arabic speaker. My dear brother, I want to ask you to give us an opening statement, then I'm going to get some biography. Maybe I should ask you that statement. And let me preface by saying the president of General Electric Company, Jeffrey Immelt, a $1 trillion company, said the two most important books of his life or that he's ever read are the autobiography of Malcolm X in the Fire Next Time by James Baldwin. The James Baldwin book, people may not be familiar with, basically was talking about his interviewing the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. The backstory to that, Honorable Elijah Muhammad was interviewing James Baldwin to be the editor of the Muhammad Speaks newspaper. But why I say that is because of the fact there are thousands of us sitting out here with autobiographies that should be told. We weren't born in Mecca. We weren't born in Karachi.
Right.
We were born in the 40 Project. We were born in Lynchburg. We were born in Black Bottom. Sometimes we're born at the top of the hill, many times the bottom of the hill. I want you, as you give an opening statement, tell us how Imam Muhammad Shakur was born. Was he born in Mecca? Was he born in the Sudan? How did you come to be Muhammad Shakur?
Alhamdulillah, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, with Allah's name, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer. First, let me say, of those two books that you mentioned, may be surprising to many. I've read The Fire Next Time by James Baldwin as a youngster, but I have never, ever read the whole autobiography of Malcolm Shabazz, never. And it doesn't mean that I don't know much about him.
Perhaps you were too busy living it.
Exactly. And that's the reason for that, because, I was living it. Everything they were saying was in the book. I already knew, because I have read it, snippets here and there, and heard others speak on it. So I always felt there wasn't no need for me to read the book, because everybody was talking about it. I'd get my information from them, and it seemed to be verifiable with many, so I really didn't have an interest of reading. It wasn't my introduction to the religion of al-Islam coming up in, as you keep mentioning, my area of birth, South Jamaica, Queens Houses, known as 40 Projects because of school. PS40 is located, across the street. I came into knowing about this beautiful Dean of al-Islam by the way of the Nation of Islam, but more so, Muhammad Ali. Everyone knew Muhammad Ali. Everyone loved Muhammad Ali, even as a non-Muslim. That name Muhammad Ali was just a different name that registered, in our minds as youngsters coming up, as one fighting against oppression, even though he was a boxer. I was born in the late 50s, and, Muhammad Ali, the Olympics, we know about him, Cassius Clay, and we know his stance here. So he was very much a focal point in the media eyes, and at that time, Brother Imam Alpha, you didn't have that many media outlets, and you got we all received the same news just about the same time, via ABC, CBS, and NBC. Well, in New York, you had those were the main three that you always had the local news at a certain time that we all would tune in into, as well as reading the few local papers that you have. So he was a big influence, in the late 60s, early 70s, and then, him being suspended and coming back was always, his name was just known, it just registered Muhammad, Muhammad, Muhammad. And then also my brother-in-law, who came out the institutions, in the late 60s, early 70s, talking, about the Nation of Islam, and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. So that name started registering. Then I had an uncle who wasn't a Muslim, but he was more into the Pan-African movement, and he changed his name to Ahmed Latif. So that name stuck in our heads, Ahmed Latif, African, Muslim name, even though he wasn't a Muslim. And I recall asking him In my early, I mean, maybe 12 or 11 or, you know, no more than 13, asking him about Africa, you know, was Africa a jungle? You know, that's specifically what I asked him. And he, like, looked at me like, man, hell no, Africa ain't no jungle. You know, where you get that from? You know, I'm like, you know, like the average kid watching, you know, Tarzan on TV. Come on, man. You know? And he's like, no, they got buildings and cities and, you know, and tall structures.
You know, I hate
know,
to
like
tell you something,
here.
Ma'am. But,
yes,
ma'am, I hate to tell you that 2014, I just hit a young man to tell me no more than 2 days ago. Well, he didn't ask me like you did. You at least asked. You know Africa ain't nothing but a jungle. So I had to pull him up, as we used to say in the old days of schooling.
Right. Right. And then, you know, so that started making the, you know, headway. You know, in my mind, I didn't know, but I mean, I didn't know what was happening. You know, I'm still, you know, outside playing, you know, baseball and basketball and football in the grass and on the concrete and running around playing, you know, hide go see and everything else, you know. But I didn't know those things would have an effect on me later on. Then I think the biggest thing that caught my attention, Brother Ma'am, and I shared this with the other Muslim, is that there was a Nation of Islam bus that used to ride past my building. I lived on the main street of the project, 160th Street in the 40 Project, and this bus would come around the corner from 108th Avenue and go past my building all the way and to down what's just called South Road and make a left turn and it disappeared because I could no longer see it. And I would watch that bus every day, Monday through Friday around, you know, after school. And I knew what time it was coming. I didn't even have a watch, but I knew it was coming at this certain time. And I would see the kids on the school. I would see the young sisters with the white headpiece on. And I would see the young students in the University of Islam, you know, on the bus. And I would watch this bus, and I would see this name, University of Islam. You know, I didn't know how to say it then, you know. Then I got more familiar, you know, with, you know, saying Islam. And I would watch this bus every day, school day, from the time it would pull up on my corner, and I would watch it till it disappeared. That was my little thing that I would do, and that resonated on me. And I was like, University, you know, of Islam, and then it had number 7 on it, you know. And I was like, wow, what school is this, you know? But it had a little kid, so that's how I subconsciously I became involved. And then as my brother-in-law started to talk to us a lot more, we would be in the room, then it start to become clear what this is all about. Now, and I'm coming into 14 years old and 15 years old, and I was just loving what he was talking about in terms. And, you know, next you know, the Muhammad speech paper with Shorman. We had a lot of brothers from my 40 projects who became Muslims, you know. Nuruddin Faiz, old Imam, Minister Victor. His name was Minister Victor. Nuruddin Faiz was
always
around. Oh, yeah,
I remember him. Victor!
Yeah, he's from my same same area. Then we had, you know, my brother got involved, and my oldest brother was one of those what you call the 5%, you know. he was into that, one of the first ones to join in Queens when they started to come out to Queens, but we didn't pay too much attention to that. But also I grew up with a lot of those younger brothers who were my age who got into that, but I never really got into it. I almost did, but I always said in time I was going to be, you know, just to speed everything up, be a Muslim, you know, to be a Muslim. And so I got into it 14, 15, in my senior year in high school, that's when I really, you know, I had my message to the black man, and then 74, then 75, I went out for the first time after the passing of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. May Allah be pleased with him for his effort and good works, and may he be admitted into paradise. After his passing, I was at number 7 for the first time, the very first time, actually stepping inside of the temple of the mosque, you know, at that time. Prior to that, it was listening to the Savior's Day address. And I tell you this, buddy, man, which is so funny, they used to gather in one of the rooms in my home. My older brother, you know, they was all getting into it. You know, they was just joining, so it had to be like 74. And they used to play the tape of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, you know. Pardon me. And I would always say, I can't understand him, you know. His the Georgia, the speech was troubling me. I'm a teenager. But once before the man was accepted a leader, but once they played the tape of him, he was playing him, and you probably know more than not. They were playing him before he was elected to be the leader in 75 on the radio. And they played him in late 74, it had to be like December, November. And I said, oh, him, I can understand. You know, who is this? They said, that's the son, that's Wallace, he's being prepared. And then next you know, we had a copy of the fruit class at that time before the passing of life. So they were playing him on the radio in New York before he was the leader. They were already playing the Imam, you know, Imam Muhammad. May Allah be pleased with him. They were already playing him in 74. I remember hearing him in 74 before I even knew who he was, because I was told, you know, my name was like, you know, little Ozzy. My name used to be Ozzy. Come, check this out. Because I was always intrigued with the knowledge of what they were saying at the time. So they knew I would want to listen to him. They said, well, yeah, tell me what you think about him. And as soon as I heard his first few words, I said, oh, him, I can understand. You know, he was clear to me. The man was clear for me from day one, you know, and the law's the only witness to that. I ain't had, you know, no issues in understanding anything he was saying. It just registered on my soul. Oh yeah, I like him. You know, I like him. I can relate to what he's saying. I'm a teenager, brother, man. I'm a teenager. You know, and 74. I had just turned 16 that December. So they were playing him. I think I was still 15 prior to December, and that was my introduction into. And then 75, I you know, came, and I was the last group, you know, in the nation that write the letters, and, you know, then the changes started taking place. So I got that tail end of that. But the Savior's Day, now, mind you, 75, even though I went out to number 7, I still wasn't really, like, active. I was still hesitant. I was still hanging with my friends. But I knew I was still going out Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday, even though I wasn't any Saturday you know, fruit classes, that came later on. But I knew I would go out and I would come back home and I would talk to my friends. You know, this is what I heard today at the Muhammad's temple. And I was intrigued, you know, like we all was with the discipline. I was scared as anything else when I first, you know, walked up the steps in Malcolm Shabazz, which is known now. That's Malcolm Shabazz, Malcolm Moss back then, Temple Number 7. Walking up the stairs and being searched and just focused on, and had they sat me in the front on the right side, and, you know, I didn't look around. I don't know how many people were behind me. I just knew people were behind me. I didn't look to my left. You know, to my right.
You were living it. You can see it in picture language, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I mean, I was like nervous and scared, and what are they going to do to me? They searching me. I mean, I ain't got no weapons on me. You know, and I'm like, what are you searching me for? You know, I'm just a kid, you know. And that was the little thing. But I kind of knew, I was kind of prepared that this was going to happen. So, but then to actually have them talking to you, hey, brother, how you feeling, man? It's your first time here. You know, all that. You know, I'm like, yeah, it's my first time here, you know. And, but, you know, and then from then I started going out. Then I went to the Remake the, you know, Make the World in Philly. And when the man came to the Madison Square Garden, see, I was a member, but wasn't active, but I was still going out. I mean, I knew in time I was going to go full-fledged this way. I just still wanted to, you know, play my ball and hang with the fellas and the neighborhood and do the little silly stuff. But I knew in time, and I recall Brother Imam walking from my project up the street, walking with a friend of mine named Tony James, man. I told him, Tony, man, I'm going to be a Muslim, man. I'm going to be a Muslim, bro. You know, I'm going to, this is exactly what I say, so let me tell you the whole thing. I said, I'm going to sell this little bit of weed I got, brother, and I'm giving it to the nation, man, and I'm through with this stuff, man. That's going to be it for me. I'm going in, you know. And, you know, he was a yell at me. He was a 5%, you know. I didn't want to go that route. I knew I was going to be, you know, at that time they was calling us the quote-unquote black Muslim. I already knew I was going in that was 75, you know, 1975. And I remember the spot where I said it at like it was today, over there by York College off of Liberty Avenue on 160th Street, walking to Jamaica Avenue. I said, Tony, I'm going to be a Muslim, man. But I would always come back from the temple on Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday and tell them what I heard because I was living the, you know, and talking the Muslim life without really being a full-fledged. So, you know, and I'm 16 now, you know. I'm 16, and this was my introduction, how I became a member of this association that I love so dearly. And I love all my Muslim brothers and sisters all over the world. But, this is home. This is home. You know, this is home for me.
Brother Imam, suppose old Archie today wanted someplace to go. Old Archie would be in quite a bit of trouble with me. I mean, we don't
have... Say that question again?
I said, let's think about the poor old Archies of the world today. 13, 14-year-olds who maybe not, they may, you know, got that little weed. They may be in some little group called gang. But where could a young Archie go today and be comfortable? It just seems to me that we don't have any hospitable situations for the millions of our young people that are looking for something. And the millions of
I'll be honest with you, brother. I mean, today, like I was back then, becoming a Muslim, I wasn't fearful of going anywhere. You know,
You were exceptional. You were exceptional. Think about the young people today in the street that don't know where to go, but are tired, sick and tired of being sick and tired, and is looking for something. That's the point I'm making. It seems to me we should be more hospitable. That's what I mean.
Well, I would try to, even those, I mean, I'm dealing with this, you know, with my sons, you know, they're teenagers, you know.
Yes,
and even though they're born in this community, you know, I'm talking to them a lot of time like they're not, you know.
Yes, sir.
And trying to use strategy on them as though they aren't because, you know, they got a strong influence. There's a strong pull and influence on them. And I try to tell them, you know, like if I was talking to, you know, non-Muslims today, though, that this is the way to go. You know, be careful of, you know, what you allow into your system, your mind, as well as your body. Filter things out. Today, Brother Imam, I mean, it is so, we're living with them, but their disconnect is just so, it's just so powerful today that I remember once the Imam Muhammad had said that you need a more powerful influence over them, that's over the pull of the world, which is this Quran and the life of Muhammad the Prophet, prayers and peace be upon him. To try to, because they don't, you know, they have so many outlets that we have that they, you know, they're going in every direction, and many of the directions that they're going in today is just not, you know, it's not beneficial for them. And for us to reach out to them is to, it's a tough task, brother. I'm going to be honest with you. It's a very tough task. And, you know, those reached out to me when I was that age. Because we didn't have so many influences pulling on us like they have today. So also with that, this is the best place for them to go, but we have to present it to them like it's not taking anything away from what they would call freedom. You know, I tell them this is freedom. You know, freedom when you're free to, you know, express yourself, but you're also responsible. You know, it's not freedom to do what you want to do. It's freedom to do what's right with responsibilities. So they're having a tougher task because the imam has said also, the environment we have come up is an epidemic of rudeness, you know, and they think this is normal behavior, you know, and we have to approach this, you know, like a surgeon. We have to be like a surgeon, first trying to diagnose what their illness is, and bring attention to that area and give them some a solution and relief and healing, which is we just have to do it the best way. And the best way to do it is with this religion, Al-Islam. Many of them don't respect the church. We got more African Americans who don't even want to believe in God at all. You know, in today's time, you know, where they want to call themselves atheists, you know, that's another group that we have to deal with. I have a niece that's very strong with that in my family, you know, and having a conversation. But they're frustrated, you know, with the dissatisfaction with what they perceive as the church saving them. And that's how I present it that way. Not anything wrong with members going to church or any other religious outlet that you see God as your authority. But they are dissatisfied with that. It's not appealing to their soul, you know. And Al-Islam does appeal to our soul, but we have to present this like the imam. The way the imam has shared it with us, you know, is through their intellect and respect their intellect and not bypass their intelligence to speak to their emotion. I feel that would be the best way to approach them in any situation where they're at. But we first have to find out, you know, where their head is at, you know. And that's going to come through dialogue and conversation and then we just have to always invite them to a better way, which is this way.
It's a tough test, but I think what we can do, we are skillful enough to create a package for them to make this attractive, even to have our place. You know, I think we need to address them the way we were addressed. You know, we didn't go to them necessarily direct in the past. We talked about how you can improve your lives. And you could
do that. Also, buddy, man, we had, I was of that age and addressing them at, you know, in the 70s and the early 80s. I was their age as well, so they can identify with one, you know, that's close to their age. So even though I was with and was mentored by many of the older brothers, you know, and sisters in the community.
But we need to raise up young people who know how to speak the language. You know,
they can relate to them as they related to me. And then many of them, you know, was friends and people I went to school with. I would see when I'm out, you know, selling the paper. They could identify with me because I was, you know, of their age, and I was able to share with them, you know, the wisdom and the knowledge from the Quran as the imam has taught us. I was able to share that, and they was able to relate with me through my age. And then I also played ball with a lot of them and continue to do so while I maintain, you know, my Muslim life. So they can relate that way as well. So, you know, we have to have some youth, you know, that's of their age and not that, you know, and be with them, you know, be with them at times, guiding them and sharing with them, and we're there to lend a hand to as well. So they will listen to them, and they can also listen to the elders, you know, also at the same time
You're saying we need a dialogue with our young people, not just a monologue, but a dialogue.
Right.
Let me ask you this.
Right.
You said something yesterday that I thought was very important, and we didn't get a chance to really finish that. You said that we also survived Mr. Farad Muhammad. I happen to agree with you, but I want you to elaborate on that.
Yes, the man was man Muhammad, the redeemed Muhammad, radi Allahu anhu, may Allah be pleased with him, was making mention of the things that we survived, you know, as African Americans, speaking in general, as a whole, you know, community. He's speaking of the civil rights movement and the Jim Crow days and, you know, our history here, you know, in America. And he also mentioned us surviving the Nation of Islam under those teachings, those catechism teachings of you know, Farad Muhammad, you know, WD-40, on how we were able to come through that with the independent view and approach on how we understand the Quran based on our circumstances, our condition, and that Allah tells us, I'm paraphrasing all of he has said, has I understood, you know, what he was saying, and to try to share this with the listening audience, the honorable audience. He was putting this in the context of how we were able to come through or overcome, being guided by Allah each step of the way of our journey from slavery, being made slave, ancestors coming over, being made slave, you know, not coming over as slave, being made slaves, surviving that 100 years of that, and we know the history of that, and then us coming to now into a religion. As we know from the 1930s, Islam, properly known, properly called El-Islam, coming through those teaching and how we were rejected by others, saying we wasn't really Muslim, we had something different than with the Quran and with the life example of Muhammad. You know, that whole area of others looking at us, you know, from a distance far, and then also coming onto a teaching of having the name Islam, having the name Muslim, having saying the Quran is our holy book, but not really being in touch with the teaching and education of what Allah has revealed to Muhammad through the Quran. And surviving who's the original man and the black man, the Asiatic and the earthway this and all that mystery, mystical teaching. And he, as he would say, that the answers to us moving forward and breaking out of that cocoon were right there in those lessons. You know, students get busy to solve this problem, and you tell us to solve this problem. And who is a Muslim, and is any other Muslim other than a righteous Muslim? Those hints and keys, as the man said, that were given to us by Mr. Farad Muhammad, and may Allah be pleased with him and reward him for his strategy, and may he be, you know, may Allah be pleased with him and give him paradise for even having a concern for us, you know, as African Americans, because ain't nobody thought about us at all. You know, we despised and looked upon, you know, by dark-skinned Africans and other parts of the world, just like everybody else was looking at us. So we was really on our own. And so the imam said we survived that type of teaching to come into, as Allah has blessed him and he shared with us, an independent view on the way we look at the world. You know, we look at Islam, we look at the world, not changing anything, but looking at based on our experience and our perspective and our cultural upbringing gives us another way, an independent way that we can approach the Quran and get the Jews out of and see the ayat that says that Allah said that he will raise up a messenger from you. And that's minkum, that's going to be from you, but also the men is also brought where it says from a starting point where they know your circumstance and they experience your ups and downs and likes and dislikes, and you have a community, a tribe just like you. Allah said he's going to raise up a messenger who's going to rehearse to us what was rehearsed to Muhammad the Prophet and Prophet Ibrahim and all the great figures and great prophets throughout, that it's the same message that we have a creator who hasn't forgotten about us and is with us through this whole journey, but gave us something unique. And all people got something unique. That, you know, a lot of them put everything in one place, you know. You can be from Jersey. You can be from New York. Okay, over here in New York, we like this. And in Jersey, you like that. And we just share. You know, but we have our contribution to the international Muslim Ummah that's very unique, that we can look at the Quran for ourselves. And that was surviving what Farah has given us, taught us the tools, and gave us the strength to stand up when nobody in America was saying, I'm Muslim. And we were out there and not even had the right religion, say, we Muslims and we don't care nothing about anything else but Muslim. And this is the best way. This is the right way. This is the clean way. This is the best rehabilitation drug rehab program in the world, the Nation of Islam, you know, the Nation of Islam teachings. And we survived that. Clean yourself up. Look sharp. You don't even carry a weapon. I don't even carry a pen knife. Clean, you know, cut your hair. Look right. Stand up. Speak tall, you know. That's, we survived that, and we came into the right teachings as Allah has blessed
I tell you, I have no problem with that statement. I always tell dear friends from Nation of Islam, I said, you know what? Which one will survive the war of Armageddon? And we have survived. Because
right.
We know some of our friends didn't survive. We know a lot of
that's
people
right.
that came through the Temple of Islam, they are raw, brother. I feel sorry for them. And then we know that there are others who are making people get lost. They're still teaching that God is in the person of Master Farah, and they're reconciliating with and the people in our association.
I was dissatisfied with that whole event. I mean, that's just me personally. I mean, you do what you got to do
in
the area.
I am too. I'm dissatisfied. I want you to share why you were dissatisfied. I happen to agree with you.
I was dissatisfied because it's not needed. You know, it's not needed. You're going to reconcile, or you're going to come amongst us. You know, I'm going to just say it's great they got a new masjid, and, you know, Allah bless you to get that. I mean, I don't need no numbers to reconcile means, you know, you recognizing that you left this, you know, you left, you know, it's like people leave a group and then go across the street and say, well, we need unity. You left. You know, you can't leave and then stand across the street and holler talking about, well, why we ain't united, you know, and you didn't want to recognize the leader that the people selected. But then you go and separate yourself and then holler, we need to be united. Why we can't unite? You know, but you come and sit your end out on this floor and learn. Just like we all had to learn, you know.
But
you can just wake up and then all of a sudden, you're gonna be over a standard. No, you got to sit down on this floor and learn the ABCs like everybody else. Yeah, regardless of what position you had in the prior experience, you know, you don't have that no more. We all on the same footing, you know. We all on the same ground. And then if this man was selected and you weren't, you know, then you're supposed to be humble enough to say, well, they selected him. But no, you're going to force yourself to be a leader on us. No, you know, you ain't my leader, and you ain't talking to me either, you know, because you ain't got nothing to say anyway. I tell them brothers that, you know, and I love, you know, we come through that experience, buddy, man. We know that. We love them. But I don't play with them no more, man. I don't sugarcoat them like they little babies anymore.
I don't play with our leaders that invite them, because those are the same people, in my opinion. They didn't want Imam Muhammad to come into the leadership anyway. Those are the people.
You know.
Invited Minister Farrakhan. I just got to let the cat out of the bag. Look, because we wouldn't be celebrating Ramadan if God had not blessed one from among us, Imam Wahdi Muhammad, who brought us into the proper understanding of this religion. And
that's
the fact. I can't deny that. So what are we going to reconcile with? I don't have any reason to reconcile and go back to Yaqub's history. I can't
go
back.
And that was my thing. What are you reconciling with? Well, what? They're not offering anything. You know, they're making you a few dollars, but they're not.
Yeah, we ain't going to reconcile. If anything, Minister Farrakhan needs to come here and sit on the floor and get taught. But see, I hate to bring this up. One of the top leaders that used to be in Dallas, Texas, he's now one of the advisors to the Philadelphia Messiah. So maybe he had something to say to him. You know what I mean? I think what we have is a weak core of leaders in this community. You know what I really believe? If we stood up and taught this religion the way the Imam taught it and with the same spirit that we had in the Nation of Islam, I don't believe there would be no Bloods and Crips. I really don't believe that. I really don't believe that, because I believe if we taught, you know, the conviction, like you said, you stood and watched that bus ride by. You weren't a Muslim, but eventually you wanted to identify. Now, young people are here today. If they saw something to identify with, I'm not talking to somebody walking around looking like they Alibaba and the 40 Thieves. I'm not talking to somebody in 2014 dressed like they were in 1972. 1972
right.
Dressed? Cool. I don't need to put on no bow tie. I don't need to put on my dress of Yaqub's history to make myself relevant. The Quran is relevant. We got a teacher who has taught us the Quran.
Right.
And I'm telling you, if you study the Quran and you study what Imam Muhammad has done and the insight, you read the Quranic Arabic, ain't nobody on the planet can stop you. They ain't a shit.
No. I mean, the Imam has said that long ago. If we, with a sincere heart, and Allah speaks of that in the Quran, he's echoing that. I truthfully can say, brother, as a witness of studying the Quran and learning, you know, the language and grammatical structure and how to identify this and that, it also gave me I started remembering talks the Imam gave years ago, you know, on certain subjects as I was looking up certain things or reading and trying and studying certain things in the Quran. It reflected me, man, talk about this, man, and boom, 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 what? And here it is right here, you know, not that, you know, I never doubted it, you know, but just to identify, this is where he's getting everything the Imam talked about is from this book, you know, and he puts it in a way.
That's right. You can find it in the book, and you can find it in the life of Muhammad. And if you look hard enough,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. And I took the advice, like the man said, okay, put all that other stuff down. You know, you're trying to read this and read that and shake milkshake the strawberry said and milkshake, you know, chocolate said this and all. You try to read all that. And they did their diligence. I don't dismiss them. I just don't like the way they presented as a god to us, you know, by other Muslims, you know. They did their thing in their time and, you know, I'm reading the same thing they reading. And then the way the Imam, the tools, you know, like the Imam said, I ain't just leading you to Quran and Sunnah. Everybody had that, you know. I'm giving you the tools on how to think, you know. And you're thinking with the Quran, you're thinking with the revelation, you're thinking with your circumstances, and you go through that whole, you know, process, you know, the knowledge evolving from this stage to that stage. I'm like, okay, well, I don't need all that. At no point, you know, I'll stick with this. If I need to look at that and make a reference to there here and there, you know, but I'm not gonna worship it, you know. And so, with that, and the man has said, have a sincere heart. He said, man, this Quran will put you in places where you would never thought you would be. You know, and I'm looking at places that I've been to, you know, even in Dallas and being in certain, you know, arenas and areas. Not that it was no, you know, big, I think maybe, you know, my younger days I would have been fascinated, you know. But I'm invited, they invited me to hear what I have to say. from this religion of the Quran and the logic, because they need the answers and solutions to solve their problems, you know. and we have that, but it'll put you on the level as to where, you know, they introduce me. They don't introduce me with all these accolades and all that. But the main thing about the Quran is standing up for what's right. You know, you have to be have integrity, and you have to stand up for what's right in the face of those who are wrong. And regardless, they once shared with you or taught you or big leader here, big leader that. No, they're wrong, and we got to, and we have to identify and stand up, and that protects the community, which we don't see a whole lot. We see it in our community. You know, you're biting all these people or crooks and stealing from you. And you know that one in Dallas that we got stealing our land and stole our land and still around here biting to speak to people. No, you can't say nothing to me, man, you know. And
that's what I'm saying. And he, it seems to me, is like a conspiracy of crooks. Because why would you invite a guy like this? This is what I told a guy at the Mali conference. I said, why would you invite a criminal? That's like if you invite Dr. Conrad Murray, who was Michael Jackson's doctor, if you invite him even inside of a doctor's office, they would arrest the doctor because it's inviting a man who's been illegally practicing medicine to even represent to the public that he's a doctor. Here's a man that's been put over two messages, and I think a third one. I don't know where he's at now. He's out representing himself as he's an honorable, upright person. You know, it beguiles me, but I see why they would join hands with Farrakhan, because anybody would befriend him. Obviously would befriend Farrakhan, because Farrakhan is the same kind of person. And I'm saying this, I love Brother Minister Farrakhan. I secured Brother Minister Farrakhan. I was a student minister under Brother Minister Farrakhan. And I would follow Brother Minister Farrakhan across the street.
Right.
You know, because...
Like, you know, you're my minister in New York. I remember in 1976, brother, in Atlanta, the Jubilee, as they call it, when I went up to him, you know, as, you know, being my minister in New York. And you know, at the time, we could see trouble was on them. I mean, I can see we was up preparing the way for the imam to come into the city of Atlanta by going up and down the coast, you know, selling the papers, you know, the Blowing Couriers at that time. And I went and gave him the greetings, and he looked at me and gave me a dry greeting. I returned to the bus and said, man, something wrong with Brother Minister, man. I said, something wrong with him, man, you know. And I was, this 76, man, so I was, 17, I was turning, my birthday was December, so I was turning 18 that year. And shortly thereafter, he left, you know, and I said, I knew something was wrong with him, you know.
But you know what,
and over the years, you know,
we need some young people now. We need some young people to be like the Couriers were. Tell us, first of all, who were the Couriers and what you all did, because I think that history is forgotten.
Yeah, you had it was four main. Well, you know, we was all, you know, in the 70s, selling the Muhammad Speaks, the Bilali News, you know, the newspaper. There were four, four brothers who were known for like the Blind Carrier. You had Khalid Amin. You know, he lives in Medina now. You had Omar Minrod. You had Bashir Ali, and I think it's Majid, big brother out of Harlem. Majid, I think Sadiq Majid, what they believe his name was. So they were known for going up and down different states selling the paper. So in 76, I was invited to go with them as well. So we left from Queens, and Omar Minrod and Khalid Amin, and they used to run a, you know, stake and take in my neighborhood. You know, Khalid was from Staten Island, and Omar was from Queens. So they had a pure few restaurants, steak and take in my neighborhood that I used to go in before I was a Muslim, you know. And they would talk to me. I'll go in there, make my sandwich, my steak, Philly steak and Philly burger and all that good stuff there. And then when they found they heard that I was became a Muslim, you know, they invited me to go up and down to sell with them, you know. And I would travel to Newark, Philly, all up and down, all through up Atlanta in 76. And then even prior to me going on there, we were selling anyway. And I was told, they told me I was the youngest member in the Nation of Islam to sell 1,000 papers in a week, you know. I was told that, you know. It didn't matter to me. I was just trying to get the message out. So I went up and down. So the Blighting Terrorists was the name that was coined to them by out of Chicago. And they went to Chicago. They all got their names from the imam. The imam, you know, gave them names, changed their X's to names. So that's what I was doing. I was with them. And we would go up and down and, you know, the East Coast all the way to Atlanta that year, selling the Muhammad Speak Bilali newspaper, Bilali newspaper. And brother, I'm gonna tell you, I can bear witness. We done found many papers not being sold. They was in barnyards and garages and in basements and temples. And, you know, we call them back edition. We would just come to each city, swoop them up and go in the neighborhood, downtown, everywhere, and just sell those back edition.
How did the people respond to you all? How did the people respond to us
the response was excellent. You know, we presented, you know, as if something that, you know, you need to know. This is our newspaper. We presented as our newspaper, and this is information that relates to us. And there's also information on Mr. Muhammad. You know, the language there, Mr. Muhammad. And this was information that would be educational and, you know, stop smoking, you know, anything with tanks, stop drinking, no, you know, no pork. You know, that was our message then. The very intrigued social message now coming into what the man was teaching, you know, the intellectual, you know, the spiritual message, we was able to add on, you know, to the social message, which brought the balance, you know, brought the balance. That was much needed coming out of just the strictly social message, do for self. Now the do for self was with the spirit, you know, and the spiritual message. So they responded excellent. We sold, brother, all up and down. I mean, we had no problem. People, African-Americans, African-Americans, you know, buying the newspapers. I sold more newspapers to Caucasians than African Americans, because in Queens we used to be up on the Jamaica Avenue and then by the motor vehicle shop, and it was just, you know, many of us didn't have too many cars. There was a lot of you know, Caucasian Americans who would buy that paper, and they would recognize and understand our cause. You know, they understood our cause, and some of them, you know, told us to get the hell away from them, but that was a few. But most of all, most part, the response was excellent. It was enjoyable, you know. For me, it was a good experience for me in relating to people, and it gave me an experience of how to deal.
Do you see the need to revive that kind of thing? That we need these things. It seemed to me that we need a 21st century FOI, 21st century MGT.
I wouldn't say so much you know, the FOI. I see we would need. We're all older now, and, you know, I mean, I can't stand and walk around.
No,
I just came out of the hospital with a bad heart and some bad legs, so you know, you're going to have me out there. I can't do it personally, but I don't think we need the, to answer your question.
I'm thinking about for the young people. Do you think that the
young
people,
it would be, I think young people would be, it would be good for them. You know, I think it would be good.
That's what
it would
I mean.
Be
I'm not talking about my boss. Hey man, I came out of hospital too and went on to Chicago and went to work, man. You know what I'm saying? But I'm speaking of what had benefited us. How our young people seem to me to be unmoored. You know, the Mormons have our young people to do 2 years of community service. I don't think it would hurt to have a young man to do 2 years of community service. You know, I believe it would be a great idea. I think these are things that we as leaders to talk, address. I think it's nothing wrong with having our daughters to have a class on how to be a Muslim woman.
Yes, they're you know, I addressed them, you know. I spoke at their church, the Mormons church, in Dallas, in several of their churches, and the youth wanted to take a class with me. They wanted me to be over a class, you know, and teaching them Arabic. This is the Mormon youth. They were very intrigued. I've done a lot of, you know, dawah and interfaith with their leaders. They don't call us a pastor; they call us a president. And at and, you know, have spoken at several of their places of worship. And also, buddy, ma'am, you know, for the audience may not know, I've also taught, you know, Arabic in the church for 6 months, you know, for
I
6 months.
And,
yes, sir. Yeah, in Dallas, I've taught in a church, Arabic. I'm talking about Arabic class I held in a church to up and coming who were going to school to be pastors and preachers. This is who I was talking to.
Now this is what Imam Muhammad has influenced you. Now I see why you say you have survived the Nation of Islam. We couldn't have done that in the Nation of Islam. We would have never gone into a church. See how Allah has expanded our chest. We know that verse where God talks about, I'm not going to give it to the people in Arabic today because it's not Arabic speaking on you. But well, God talks about how he's expanded our chest to, you know.
Yes, and remove the burdens. And remove the burdens off our backs.
Yeah. So we don't have those burdens. We don't have no lieutenants sitting on top of our head. You know, we ain't got to worry about this is a burden. I don't care what a whiz rack it's called. Yeah, we don't have that
right
anymore.
Yeah, I was how that came about, buddy, ma'am. I was the pastor. I mean, they had one of the interfaith programs we had at the masjid in Dallas, and they after the program they approached me, the pastor and their member and their members asked me, can I come, you know, and teach them Arabic, buddy, ma'am. I mean, if you could have seen my face, I couldn't see my face then. You know, but I tried my hardest to stay on my feet. I almost fainted, you know, and I was shocked that I was asked this. But I wasn't surprised, but I was shocked that I was asked in this way. I was almost speechless, you know.
You knew it had to be the power of Almighty God, Allah. You knew that.
Absolutely, absolutely. It couldn't be nothing but from Allah, you know. And, you know, and I'm trying to register.
Tell me, ma'am, I got to give the 40 a shout out. From Lil Archie from the 40 to the man that's teaching and teaching the preachers. Bro, you tell me God didn't work through us. I don't think we know. I told the people in Ramadan session, as the Quran said, that this is a book, this is a manual. There's no doubt in it for those who regard God, you know, those who regard, you know, Mutakin, not talking about the criminal, talking about the good hearted, decent, sincere person. And therefore, there shouldn't be any doubt in us. So we should be equivocating, be shucking and jiving, peeping and hiding. We should be firm. And that's why we got to be firm on these hypocrites and thieves and criminals. You know, a lot of us are afraid to stand up. If we stood up in our neighborhood, you know what? If we really stood up in our community, we wouldn't have the kind of corruption we have in our community. At the risk of being unpopular, I don't care about being unpopular. I'm going to stand up for what Imam Muhammad taught. But you know what? Imam Muhammad, in 1972, I was in Chicago. I heard him blast the ministers. He was in an FOI uniform, and he was a minister of his deity. And he was spanking them then, and I told the people at the Ramadan session, I've got my whip out, and I'm going to continue to whip anybody who get in the way of this Quran and this guidance of God that sent us through Imam Muhammad. And we are the people who have been chosen by God to take this message to the world. That's what we have to do. There's no doubt in this. There should be an equivocation. We shouldn't be running scared from Sheikh Bubba. Bubba ain't got nothing. In Jersey, we call the brothers who think they know two words of Arabic, we call them Ben Bubba, you know. He thinks he's a moose. He's eating up a moose, you know. And I'm not making fun of him because I love him. But I have to shame him to let him know that we are set in the school of the greatest teacher that walked the earth since the Prophet Muhammad himself. You know?
That's
And we're honest, we deserve that. Man, look at all the
choices
we've got. God wouldn't be just if you didn't make us the teacher and not the student. See, I mean, I think it's powerful. There you are, teaching men with a seminary training. Let me ask you this while I'm at it. What are you doing now in the cause? I know you just got out of the hospital, but you sound fit and ready to work to me. Are you doing it? Are you teaching down in Atlanta, in the Atlanta Mosque?
Well, yes, and I mean, I've done some, you know, Friday talks at a couple of messages here, but I mainly sit in the Arabic class under Imam Rauf Rashidan on a Sunday morning, brother. He's a grammar teacher, tafsir with the Imam, and that's mainly what I look forward to, you know, right now. And, I'm not moving around too well. And I'm still, you know, basically new here in the city of Atlanta. So I just finding my way, you know, around. And
what type of work are you?
But no, I'm not. You know, my area of interest is always interfaith, brother, ma'am. You know, sharing with non-Muslim and other religious groups. I mean, I don't see that much being done here at this time. Like I said, I don't know everybody. And not all over the place at this time. But that's, I would say, where my strength is at. I've been pretty blessed to be able to relate, you know, this message. And like the man said, we have to know that this is the message of the Quran, is the message for the world, you know. And sharing that in the simple, logical, you know, way that they can strive to understand, you know, not that, you know, everything we say they will understand, because only Allah controls that, but just to be a presenter of the message in the best manner, as well as striving to live it, you know, in the best manner. Not just to, I don't want to just talk to people, man. I'd rather, you know, work. I can pick up trash and, you know, clean up the mess and all that stuff too, you know. But my forte, I like to work. You know, I like to get out there and work and meet with the people.
And just for a curious, I've never seen you do anything but work, but I did see you play basketball. You're pretty good on the court. I know you must miss playing basketball. Do you still play basketball?
Nah, but I mean, all I can do at the gym when I go to try to work out is just stand there and shoot, brother. That's about it. My wrist is still fine, but I still can shoot the J. But as far as moving and running, you know, I don't have a meniscus in one of my legs. And, you know, with the bypass surgery, it took out a vein in the same leg. So my legs are not fit for running anymore, but I can stand there. And at the gym, I try to coach a few young people that I see, you know, that was out there, you know, by themselves and shooting. I would assist them passing the ball and, you know, tell them how to set their feet and, you know, dribble this way, that way. So I still assist in that area, but – as far as me playing a structured game, you know, I can.
Are you a Knicks fan? Are you still a Knicks fan?
Yeah, I'm still a Knicks fan. I'm still a Knicks fan. You know, really disappointed. But you know, the game today has changed so much that the and this is the mentality of the, you know, the people that we're dealing with too. You know, they. But I still like the game.
Yes, sir. Are you doing any coaching the young people there in Atlanta? You know, it seems to me it would be a very good way to reach a lot of our young people who may be Muslim, maybe non-Muslim. I think really a lot of our non-Muslims, if they were on basketball teams, athletic teams, that would reach a lot of those young people. And we got to find
I would like to do. I know my whole probably thing is probably the my energy level probably would be, I will have to monitor it. But that's always, I just try to, you know, focus that through my sons. You know, they're playing high school football, you know, back in Texas. So I try to, you know, get them, but, you know, they don't want to listen to me either, you know. Yeah, they don't think I know anything. I should not play this thing on.
You just the dead, so the world tells them that he's
right. Yeah, so, I mean, that's what I would like to do. I mean, you know, always, you know, die wild, man. I don't have to be in no mass here talking to over to the community unless you're gonna do some work, you know. You know, I'm sick
of all
that
talking, man. What do you do for a living, Brother Imam? You're retired or what?
Yeah, I was in the banking industry for like the last 18 years, so I'm like medically retired right now, bro. So I'm,
you can join the conversation at 805-727-7013. We're having a wide-ranging conversation with Brother Imam Muhammad Shakur. I'm not going to let him be in Atlanta or Dallas. I'm going to bring him right on back to Southeast Queens, where his organs are. I know his spirit is also there. And I'm going to tell you something. You owe the world an autobiography. I'm telling you, brother. You know, people talk about the autobiography of Malcolm. I've been telling believers. You all need to write your autobiography. In the future, it will be Dawah will speak to you. You know, everybody gives the Malcolm story, but you know, Malcolm is just one story. It's one narrative.
Right.
But there are many, many others of us who have come through Islam, who I understand you played at Hillcrest High School. I mean, you were a star in your own right. But the call of the masjid and the call of the Al-Bilal was so powerful, it pulled you out of Southeast Queens to make a world tour to push the Bilalian news. That's a powerful call.
It sure did, brother. I mean, it really has. I mean, I reflect back on that. I never thought about, autobiography. I mean, you're mentioning that. I mean, that's something I may have to consider writing just to leave, a history. History, and I think that is a good idea. I may start taking that on my time and, how to begin that. But it has, when I reflect on that, I mean, it's taken me to South Korea to be in an interfaith conference. It has, I went into the Hajj in 2006 for 2007. And, it allowed me to address some young Africans. You know, Brother Man, I addressed some young Africans when I was in Mecca. They saw me walking. You know, they saw me walking. I was in the tent area. It was in Mina. This was before the Hajj began. And I was just walking by, and this brother grabbed me and asked me, can I talk to some youth, some African youth? He was from Ethiopia. It was about a good maybe 10 of them, bro. They were sitting on, they were the workers there, you know. And they happened to see me just walk by, and they wanted to talk to me about United States and about their rights there in Mecca. You know, and I'm like, I mean, I don't know Mecca that well. So I said, sure, I mean, I ain't going nowhere, You know, my plane will leave for another whole week, so where am I going, you know. And he was translated. And they were asking me about human rights, Brother Imam, about human rights, about rights for us as African Americans here in America. And, you know, and this is so crazy about, you know, so my brother, I didn't change my dress, Brother Imam, you know.
Yes, sir.
I had my American clothes on. And they knew I was American.
And Brother Imam, you probably had a pair of gaiters on.
No, I had some Nikes on, Brother Man. I had some Nikes on, you know.
They got crazy when they hit the basketball court. You was ready to dump somebody. You could show them what the 40 could do. We have a call here. I think he's from Queens. And we're going to have him right on. We're having a good time. We speak with him at Muhammad Shakur. He's in Atlanta, Georgia, but he's really an international person. Call me on the air.
Yes, sir. Brother Imam, this is Brother Tabby.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother Tabby.
Yes, Brother Tabby.
Waalaikum assalam. What's your name? I didn't catch the name, brother.
Tabby, but I'm out of the 40 projects, too. That's where I started at.
And, okay, give me your name again.
My name was Michael Nutt. I was coming up over there. And,
okay. And what's your name now?
Stab it.
Okay. Strength. Stab it. Yeah. Okay. All right.
And,
yes,
I mean,
sir,
it's amazing
ahead.
Because, you know, all the steps you took, I took the same thing. You know what I'm saying? I started over there with, matter of fact, we started Muslims in recovery over there in the projects, in the community center, me and Alfred.
Okay. Okay.
And you know, I'm just trying to remember because I'm holding on the whole hour. I mean, my phone, these phones, man, it's hard to figure them out. But you know, you mentioned Nuruddin Faiz. That's a brother. If I ever admired a brother, another man, that was him. He was the smoothest brother. We used to call him the Silkworm. But then Allah blessed me to go over to. I got moved over to Corona. And I got with Larry Forex over there. The man Faiz, he was over there. And that's actually where I got started at. And I came to Brooklyn. You know, I got a lot of history over here in Brooklyn, you know what I'm saying? Because I was there when Muksi Khalifa got killed. And I was one of the
We were with him. We were playing ball with him a day or two prior to him being shot. Yes.
Right. Well, I was there, and I was there when he passed. They took him to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I've never known the outcome of that, though.
Yeah, and, he was answering the assistant domestic dispute, you know, with the sister, and he knocked on the door.
Yeah.
And the gentleman opened and fired on him as he opened the door.
Well, he fired through the door, I think.
Through the door, open the door. I know he was doing. He was at the door.
Like I said,
we were with our late brother a few days before. We were playing ball.
Right.
Before this happened, yes.
His brother Sammy, which I haven't seen, but he was out Arabic. He at that time, and he had already been had affiliation with Islam someplace. And he was a very good brother.
Okay.
I don't know what happened to him though. But there were so many things that were, you know, running through my mind.
Yeah, my family name in 40 was the Welches. I'm from the Welches. That's my family name.
Welch.
Yeah, my two of I got three other brothers, Michael, my oldest, and Kenny.
Yeah, I got to know your family, man, because I went to 40.
Yeah, I lived on 160th Street.
That's where I got my FOI training in 40. And,
okay. Well, you know, I came home a couple of years ago to get my brother Kenny a janazah, you know.
All right.
Yeah, and then seeing all of, you know, the community and the family and all of the all the old heads, you know, who left off and, you know, they see
how all the people down there now is just the people that you know they chosen.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So ain't really nobody. They have kind of cleaned it up over there. But I don't go over there. If I'm over that way, I shoot through there real quick. It'd be daytime.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, you know, I mean, I still have family that lives in the project there, so.
Right.
Yeah, alhamdulillah, man. So, yes, yeah, we did a lot of, we brought Imam Ali Rashid to PS40 one weekend. We had him come over there to speak.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we had the projects all sold up. We had the grocery store there. And then, I mean, with Nuruddin Faiz. And, yeah, quite a few that there's brother Kadir, Abdul Salam. He's in Maryland. He's from 40. He's from there. Names to be Arthur Johnson. He lived down the other end of 40 near 110, which was called Ringerhorn.
Arthur Johnson. Yeah.
So we had quite a few Muslims that hung in there.
Yeah, well, it was so many until that's what got me, you know, because I used to see all the Dinnerfolks.
Yeah.
We used to call them Dinnerfolks and bebopping, and then all them brothers turned Muslim, you know, it was the hardest brothers, the brothers who were supposed to bring the biggest gangsters. All of a sudden, they was walking down the block from us and all these. And how you doing?
The flows was very heavy. Like I said, you know, they got me, alhamdulillah, and I stayed with it, you know, and that's stayed with it, brother. And that's the main thing. That's what the mission was. The mission was about.
I guess
mission was to get us, you know.
But let me
and,
say this,
say to them when I see them, you know, when I go home, you know, I don't belittle them, although you know I know they left, you know. Yeah, y'all helped shape me, you know. I tell them, you know, y'all helped shape me to who I am. Y'all all had a hand in raising me up because I listened to every last one, because I was young, you know, I was a young Muslim,
I was the younger one,
you know, and they were all older than me, and but they all, you know, when I see them, I tell them they all had a hand in shaping who I am today.
I
pass it on to my sons, you know, and I try to share with them that, you know, I listen to all of the men and women in my, you know, my community, in my neighborhood.
My parents wasn't
Muslim, but they never objected to me being Muslim. When I changed my name in 77, they had no, objection to it at all. In fact, my father had to, you know, he had to cuss out my uncle and his brother and sister about, you know, because I was named after him, you know, I was Archie Wells.
Right.
And they still call him. And I didn't show no disrespect. I was disciplined, you know. And they would still call me Archie. I answered, yes, Aunt so-and-so, Uncle so-and-so. And finally my father said, hold up, man, let me tell y'all one thing. This is my son. His name is Muhammad now. You know, his mother called him Muhammad. I call him Muhammad. His brother and sisters call him Muhammad. And Yacht, blah, 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 blah. Y'all going to call him Muhammad, too. You know, they had no problem after that, you know, even though if they still slip up. I never had really no issue with that. So I'm thankful that my family didn't really attend church on a regular basis, you know, holidays. So me becoming Muslim, but it was always influenced my older sister, even though they didn't stay with it in the nation and all that. I learned the greetings from my little nephew, man, at that time. You know, I used to trick him and have him, like, say it. Hey, say that thing again, man, you know, the salam thing. Say that. And he was saying that's how I would get it, you know. And because they would go out, you know, before I started going out. And he had to be, like, 6 or 7 years old, my nephew Elliot, you know. I tell him to this day, man, I like the greetings from you. He'd be laughing, you know. And I used to tell him, man, say it. And he used to say, salam alaikum, man. That's how I learned how to say it from him, because I was so embarrassed to say, how you say that thing again, you know. But that's how I learned it. And so, yeah, brother, so, you know, that history is there. I'm thankful for Allah, you know, being raised up there. You know, it's a value experience that I take with me, you know, wherever I go. And it's always going to be a part of me. But it has, you know, brought dignity, man. So, you know, alhamdulillah, man. And then, you know, maybe inshallah when I come to New York, I'm planning on coming soon. And I can see you. Again, I can't get your face, but I probably once I see you, I'll be like, okay. Yeah, that's what that is. Let me say this though.
You know, when they talk about the first movement and how some of the positive and negative things were, and I just like to, one of the things that got me when I first got there was the fishing team. They used to go around 107th Avenue, 160th Street, and all places. You know, looking for brothers who carry to the temple on Sunday. And so the brother jumped out, came up to me. It was a car full. He jumped out the car, and he called me God. He said, hey, God, how you doing? And shocked the hell out of me. You know, just threw me off. But farther down the line, though, when I finally did submit, you know, I was trying to get rid of them cigarettes, because I was smoking a pack and a half a day. I couldn't get rid of them. Until Brother Alfonso VII. He came, caught me on Jamaica Island one day, and he started screaming, hey, look, here go God, I got fire coming out of his mouth. Well, he embarrassed me so bad.
Right. Well, we used to run from him, man, at first, though, you know, and I was small, you know, then finally they got me, too, you know.
Right. All right, brother, I ain't gonna hold you no more. Good talk to you.
Alhamdulillah, brother, you know, may Allah bless you and continue to bless you and, you know, hold on. Stick to this way, brother. This is the way.
Right, yes, sir.
The
imam
has told us, brother. This is the way, brother. So, inshallah, I'm
Brother Imam, I know you got to go. Yes, sir.
I'm on your time, brother.
Oh, good. Okay, we got about another 11 minutes.
I'm like brother Akbar, man. I'm going 12 rounds, brother.
Yes, sir. I see. You know, I'm going to ask you this. Do you think this, I've found thousands of people when I interviewed them have gone through the same experience. There was something very special. It some kind of felt comfortable to you. You know, and genes, and I really made on check my genes out. I didn't check it out. One of my family members did, found that we did come from Muslim genes. But, I thought I was going to ask you, do you feel that somehow or another this is genetics
while you kept asking your nephew, tell me that Salaam thing. You know, I mean, is that any genetic connection? And if it is a genetic connection, should we be appealing to African-American people to take a look at this religion?
Yes, I believe, I mean, I kind of thought about that, too, in light of my, even though my uncle wasn't a Muslim, but he changed his name to Ahmed Latif, you know, and he was doing, he had passed, and I was told he was tracing our genetics to see if there's, I'm quite sure it is, buddy, ma'am, you know, with many of us who have become Muslims, you know, as African-Americans, I mean, we came, I think 100% without a doubt is in our genes. And it was just something that, you know, was easy for me to gravitate towards. And because I've never been, you know, even growing up in the projects, you know, where we grew up, man, we didn't have a whole lot of fights and all that like other areas. We were very well known, all of us were very well known. And, you know, sports.
I think it's revolutionary about your dad. You know, I know a brother right now, he's pretty well known in our community. His dad still, after nearly 50 years, his dad is in the 90s, refused to call him by a Muslim name. So your dad was an exceptional person. You know what I mean? I mean, a lot of pride.
Yes,
he may not
my mom's too, it wasn't, now I was the only one who, now my brother chose a name, but I changed it, you know, legally, you know. And I find that, too, because I remember many brothers and sisters had a very difficult time with their parents, you know, them changing the names. And with me, it was just smooth. I just said, Mom, you know, I'm changing my name. And she said, what you changing it to? You know, and I said, okay. And I'm named after my father. You know, I was named after my father.
And you know how dads are about you being that junior. I mean, a lot
right.
of dads are crazy, man. You know, boy, what
right.
you changing my name?
It was, buddy, ma'am, it was no objection at all. I mean, it wasn't like, what? You doing what? You going to do what to my name?
It
was
it
none of that.
To
it,
me,
was just,
it sounds to me like your daddy was a closet Muslim.
Yeah,
you know what
be.
I mean?
Well, he ain't had the multiple wives, but he had the multiple woman thing, so that was in his genes somewhere from Africa. I have 22 siblings, but I know 17 of them. But I believe I have 22 altogether.
I think that African American men had a hard time swallowing the Jesus is God bit. You know, I think about my father. He was a Christian, you know, but he was very supportive of me being a Muslim. You know, when I first
right.
came home, I told my mama, I'm 13 years old, I want to be a Muslim, and my mom almost had a heart attack. But my daddy converted, ain't nothing wrong with that boy. Boy, that's what you want to be.
And, you know, my father wasn't, he wasn't an educated man. I mean, he had his own business. He had a store. Grocery business store that he had with his with some of my relatives. But far as reading and writing, he had no objection to me becoming a Muslim or anybody in my family becoming a Muslim. You know, we told him we need pork no more. He said, okay, you know, y'all just stay away from mine. You know, that more for me. You know, I mean, he had no objection. And I said, you know, like when I changed my name, and then you know, like I said, I was named after him. With no objection at all, he said, what you want to be called? And I said, I want to be called Muhammad. You know, he's like, what's your last name? I said, my last name.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. May your dad get paradise just for that. You know, I know, I have seen people become Muslim. I know a brother became a Muslim, and he had come off Haran, and his mother offered him Haran if he would denounce the Muslim. What? I never
really?
Forget that.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's a lot of times, whatever your father did, brother, other than that, just the fact that he accepted you, and not
yes.
only did he accept
yes.
you, he would fight for his brothers. And you see, it tells me that your father had to be a wise man because he was a businessman. So I'm sure the appeal in his consciousness of the Amulet Muhammad do for self and independent, you know, a lot of people, they were like the answer. They didn't have the spirit or the heart to join us. But we got to understand there are millions of our people who are sympathizing with us. And that's
right,
why Imam Muhammad said we should have big meetings. That's why what you're doing to the churches, I do a lot of work like that too. That's why this program is geared primarily to reach non-Muslims. You know, and I
have
some calls from preachers. And I was listening to one of my nieces came to me, and she said, you know, Uncle Now, I didn't know, why don't you tell me more about this on that? She's a Christian preacher. And I said, well, you know, what I'm saying is there's a lot more room in this country for us than we know about. And I think
we
need to stop talking to ourselves, and we need to do a much bigger dawah effort. I'm trying to convert people. Because God does that. But just to expose what we have gotten. Would you agree with that? And I'd like for you to make a comment.
I agree. I absolutely agree with that. Our job is just to tell the message. You know, live the message and tell it. And that can be anywhere, any place, at any time, you know. Live the message and spread the message, you know. But you can't do it if you're not, you know, you don't have integrity and you don't have, you don't stand upon principle.
I believe you're doing it in Dallas now. They've had some real painful transitions. How are they doing there in Dallas and in DeSoto?
Oh, DeSoto? Oh, I don't even know. I don't even know.
No, but the believers, how are they doing in Dallas, the original masjid down there? How are they?
Well, I don't know. I mean, before I left there, I wasn't at the, I haven't been to that masjid in like years. I mean, I was the resident imam there after, just had too many issues going on that caused me to just step away from there legally. You know, it's just through the courts. I've been invited to speak, but I haven't been, apologized to for all the, things that were done to me, So I just stay away, DeSoto, I stay all together away from that as long as that gentleman there. I don't even want to be around that at all.
Is he still the one that's
in DeSoto? The community in Dallas is fractured. Brother, ma'am, I mean, it's just fractured. Everybody's just at their own little place. And that's what you have. It was that way before I left. It's just so distrustful. You know, we have so much distrust with money and property being stolen and mistrust and even, Muslims trying to help us. And I can legitimately say that, Muslims from other parts of the world, were helping us, and then they present money to the leader, and he just spent it and kept it, so that brought about a lot of distrust. I mean, it's distrust with the Muslims of African Americans that they go to their little place here and they may mingle here and there, but they don't want to be under or around certain people, because I don't want to be under and around certain people. So it's really fractured to me. It's a shame because it's a very valuable, vibrant dawah area, because you have so many churches and synagogues that
it's
is,
also a very big city. I mean, Reverend Jenks, it's a big, huge city. I mean, Reverend Jenks has a church of 35,000 members, I believe.
When he first arrived in Dallas, brother, and when he first arrived in Dallas, He was using the Nation of Islam social message to get members there, bro. He was claiming non-denominational, but he was preaching the Nation of Islam social do-for-self message that was missing in the Christian area of Dallas.
You know,
and everybody was leaving their churches, because a lot of the ministers there were liking Farrakhan. You know, they would come and speak, and they go, and then, but they weren't the big, big churches. So they brought him in to offset that. They were, the youth were leaving the church. They were gravitating more towards us. you know, and then we purchased some land in 1995, 156 acres that was stolen by the imam there. We were right to make tremendous progress there.
Will you close us out with a prayer? You know, because this is painful. You know, I see these big cities, and this is not just one city. We are plagued by this plague in most of these cities from bad leaders. It just hurts me to see the people of Dallas, particularly the African-American, who should get a first shot at Islam. I think we should have a first dibs, as we would say.
Well, I'm going to tell you this, Buddy Ben, before we move on. You remember when the imam started asking for the D's, the names of
yes, sir.
Who names is on these D's around the country?
Yes, sir.
That was because I was raising hell in Dallas. That the reason why
yes,
our
sir.
Property and land was stolen because Yaki Abdullah's name was on the property.
And
you
know
I was raising hell that this is how he got away with it, you know.
Imam Muhammad stopped even calling him Imam Yahya in the last 2 years of his leadership. He called him Brother Yahya. See, that's what people should understand, too. He wasn't
well, they call him, in the criminal world, they call him John Brown. That's what he uses when they do wrong, when they go back. You know, they go back and forth to old names. I mean, everybody just about a lot of people over in that masjid over there in prison or just came out of prison or going to prison over there in DeSoto, you know. So, you know, they call that the errors when you're doing wrong, you can go to DeSoto, you know. You get support when you go over there. You know,
yeah,
that's just the way it is. That's how I see it.
Unfortunately, I met one of the members there who had just come out of federal prison. I ain't going to say no more.
Yeah, see, you already know what I'm saying, so you can bear witness. And I don't hold nothing back, man, talking about that. I don't care, man. You're a criminal. And I got on film, and I tell Muslims around the country, stop biting these people, man, in your city. Go to their city and have a program. You know, this way you can see what they're doing, you know.
I would speak out and send
information out that y'all got a crook coming. They ignored me, man. They didn't pay no attention to me.
You know why they invite him? Because the cities that he's been invited to, they get crooks there too. And there's another state, it's an association quote. So that's why they crooks stick together. Close us out, Brother Imam, with a dua and Ramadan Mubarak to Eid Mubarak to you and your audience. And tomorrow we have on the program Reconnect Thursday, followed by the healthcare. Finally, we will have a program. Brother Imam Yusuf Abdul Salam from down in Selma, Alabama, and Sarah Diwali, the communicator, will be on at 1:00. We're going to start coming back on Saturday, but you know, last Friday I had a birthday. I won't tell you how old I am. I'm over 18. I tell you that. And my body feel like it's over 50. So I'm going. We're going to give this. We need all the help we can get. Close this off, Brother Imam.
So let me first say it's been a pleasure and a privilege to have the opportunity to share with your honorable listening audience, Brother Imam Alfred Muhammad. Wish to all the Muslims who celebrated the Eid Mubarak today, that Allah rewarded them for this fast month of Ramadan. And the beauty of the Ramadan is to follow the instructions. We start when we sight the moon, and we end when we sight the moon. And if it's not available, we count the days and complete the fast. So wish them all the success and blessings of the month of Ramadan, or Eid Mubarak. And close with the dua, Rabbana, antana fi dunya hasanatan wa fi akhirati wa hasanatan. Our Lord, grant us the good in this life and the good in the future, and protect us from the torment of the fire. Ameen. Assalamu alaikum.